So this evening, Curtis is going to be covering the early years of Moses before his calling, and then LaVon will come up and talk about his later years after his calling.
Good evening. Everybody's in the back. You should pick up the pulpit and move it back a little further, or you could just move forward. No, it's good to be back. Seems like a long time since I've been here. This morning, we got sick children at home. This morning, we were trying to decide who's staying home. And I told my wife, I said, you just go, and I'm going to be talking tonight. I can get out of the house tonight. And so it just seemed like a really long time. I think it's been 3 weeks. Had a good time last 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, in Louisiana. It's good to go see Romans with Dwayne and a group of men that I'm not always with the exception of Kyle. I had a lot of fun with him in the week in Louisiana. So, yeah, as Dad mentioned, we have a split topic tonight, LaVon and I do. And mine's on the beginning of Moses' life. I told him, I said, I could take about 5 minutes to cover that. He's going to need the rest of the time to cover the life after his call. But I was able to get a little bit of my thoughts together and get some information here, some good thoughts here, I think, out of his life before God called him. But I want to start here in a couple verses in Psalms 8. Verse 3, it says, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him?" A couple questions I want to open up with, looking at Moses. When I think of Moses, we think of how the enemy presses in. Cloud and fire defended, the strong and mighty wind, waters divided, enemies turned to flee, then hurled into the sea, children are set free because Jehovah provided. Darkness pierced by light, wrong replaced by right, death gives way to life, we are not abandoned. One day to arise, see him with our eyes, fire fills the skies, our holy companion. Who is like you, holy and true, awesome empire, glorious God of wonder? The sea obeys her mighty waves, bowing down to worship you. Who is like you, Jehovah, Redeemer, the great I am? Thank you, God, for your guidance, grace, protection, and mercy. This is a song that's sung by Halal. I pulled some of the words out of it. If I was more musically talented, maybe I would have got a group around to sing it. But I listen to this song a lot on the bus. You have 32 plus hours. It's supposed to be 32. We add 15 minutes every 2 hours for the stop. Do the math, 16 hours, a 16-hour trip. We had a lot of time, so I was able to get a lot of study, and this song stuck out to me. It just kind of sums up Moses' life more after his call. We see that God was with him. My focus tonight is not on the awesome phenomenons that God used to guide his children and still uses today, but I'm going to be looking more before Moses was called. So in doing this study, we're going to read here in Exodus chapter 1. This is where I'm going to get most of my reading from, Exodus 1 and 2. So if you want to turn to that, Moses wasn't even supposed to be alive. We see how the Pharaoh had commanded the midwives to kill all the firstborn sons. All the sons were to be killed. Moses wasn't even supposed to be alive. but it was because of God. As you see there in Psalms 8, who is man that thou art mindful of him? God had a plan, as we're going to see here. So I'm going to read Exodus chapter 1, read the whole chapter and come through with some thoughts. So now these are the names of the children of Israel, which came to Egypt, every man and his household came with Jacob: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher, and all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and the generation, and all that generation. And the children of Israel were fruitful, and increased abundantly, and multiplied, and waxed exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more than and mightier than we are. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply and come to pass, that when there falleth out of any war, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities of Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of one was Shiprah, and the name of the other Puah. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but we'll go with it. And he said, When you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then you shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. And the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said unto them, Why have you done this thing and have saved the children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered ere the midwives come in unto them. Therefore God dealt with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, Every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. So we know how Joseph saved Egypt here, going back even before, saved Egypt from the famine, and his family came into the land. So you kind of look back prior to Moses' time, God was working in Egypt there. Then this, you know, they passed on, the new Pharaoh, the new generation came along. It was very quickly forgotten. What all Joseph and God had done for them in bringing them out of that famine. For the Egyptians rose up against the Israelites, taking their freedoms away, starting an era of slavery and persecution. We see that God continues to bless the children of Israel even through their persecution. God has a plan for each one of us. I go back to that verse in Psalms 8. What is man that thou art mindful of him? God has a plan for each one of us, just as he did for Moses and the children of Israel. We see that God continues to bless the children of Israel even through persecution. God has a plan. We see how God uses the Egyptian midwives to carry out his plan. Then Pharaoh realizes what was happening and commanded the people to cast all the newborn sons into the river. You see, he built houses, as it says here, for the midwives. It's almost like he put them away. So I want to shift now into chapter 2. I'm going to read the whole chapter. I kind of split this one up a little bit. And there went out a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit that would be done, to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when they saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" I think I will stop here. We see the sister here intervened. Right away, she's, "Shall I go and call a nurse for thee?" She knew who the child belonged to. To pick back up here in verse 8, "And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Go.' And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, 'Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages.' And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, 'Because I drew him out of the water.' And it came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, that he went unto his brethren and looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together, and he said to him that did the wrong, 'Wherefore smitest thy fellow?' And he said, 'Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian?' And Moses feared and said, 'Surely this thing is known.' Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, that he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. And when they came to rule their father, he said, 'How is it that ye come so soon?' And they said, 'An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds, and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock.' And he said unto the daughters, 'Where is he? Why is it that ye have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread.' And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter. And she bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom. For he said, 'I have been a stranger in a strange land.' And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham and with Isaac and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them." In Exodus, second chapter here, we see here the story is kind of shifting there in the second half of that of chapter 2 to the young adulthood of Moses. He was a strong, well-educated young man who apparently knew how to fight, as we see here, where he slew the Egyptian. Very well trained. He was raised up in the best of conditions, I guess you would say, had everything he would ever need. But it's interesting to me, how quickly, like in that first section there, where he smites the Egyptian, and they come back to him and ask him if he's a judge. There, I think it's in verse 14 here, where he feared. He knew his brethren. He was separate. He knew who his brethren were. But yet he knew he had done wrong immediately. As he stood up for a Hebrew that was struck by an Egyptian, he killed the Egyptian, covered him in the sand, and left him. When Pharaoh heard about this, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled. He ran away. And he dwelt in the land of Midian and came to a well. While sitting at the well, the priest's daughters came to water their father's flock. While they tried to water their father's flock, the shepherds came and to drive them away. Moses, seeing this, stood up and helped them. So he goes from a man of killing someone to a man of compassion. He sees these shepherds coming and driving these seven girls away. He springs to action and helps them water the flock. So we see that he had compassion on them. This seemingly happened very quickly, as their father was surprised when they came back so soon. He asked the question, you're back so soon today. The priest asked of his daughters where this man and why is it you have left him behind? The priest responds, go and call him and bring him back so that he may eat bread. The father wanted him back. He wanted to say thank you. He wanted to serve him. The priest's father was very pleased with this thing. And Moses himself seemed very satisfied for this encounter at the well. Moses was running from his crime or murder. It seemed to he maybe settled in a little bit here. But here we see how he had compassion. As I mentioned, the priest gave Moses his daughter and bare his son and named his name Gershom, meaning I have been a stranger in a strange land. He felt out of place. The circumstances are never unseen or unnoticed by God, as we see in verses 23 to 25. God's timing does not always line up with our timing. We are faithful to cry out to him in prayer and remain faithful. He will remain faithful and deliver us in his time and will, as seen in verse 25. We see how and God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. Again, I go back to Psalms chapter 8. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Of all his creation, he chose us. He chose man. So that's all I have. I'm going to turn the time over to Levon for the rest of the story.
Well, good evening. I guess if you notice, it took 20 minutes for him to do two chapters, and I've got four books. So you can do the math how long you'll be here. What's that?
The night is young.
I told Mary on the way in, I said, if I cover everything, we might be out of here by 10. And then she said, well, that'll do one of two things. Either it'll make them never ask you for a topic again, or the next time they do, they'll give you all evening. So, but no, Moses is a very interesting man. Years ago, I had done somewhat of a character study on him. And there's just so much here that it's just impossible to cover everything. So we'll get started, and I'm sure we're just going to have to cut it short. But I did have a list of some unique things here about Moses. One thing, after Joseph, there was no communication from God for 400 years, and then Moses came. And also, after, if we look in the Bible, after Malachi, there were 400 years of silence, then Jesus came. So some of these are comparisons to how Moses compares to a type of Christ. Moses was a type of Christ. He delivered Israel from the slavery of Egypt, and Christ delivered mankind from the slavery of sin. Moses was the first to do miracles. Also, maybe we think, you know, the older we get, we think, well, you know, it's time to slow down and God can't use me as an older person. But Moses was 80 years old when God called him, and he did all this work that we're going to talk about in the last 40 years of his life. So you're never too old or too late in life to do what God wants you to do. He was the first mediator between God and man, and in that sense, he was a prophet. In his childhood, he got teaching about his Israelite roots and his people from his mother. He received the best training in Egypt's palace, and he was a master of it all. Then after that, he spent 40 years in the wilderness. God had prepared him both for dealing with Pharaoh in the palace and with the Israelites in the wilderness. Moses represents the law. He made one mistake, and that cost him not to enter into the promised land. It reminds us that by the old law, we cannot make it to the promised land. He led 2 million people in the wilderness who often grumbled against him and God. Jesus intercedes for us to God in spite of our iniquities, just like Moses interceded for the Israelites. On the mountain of transformation, Jesus was with Elijah and Moses. Moses represented the law, Elijah represented the prophets, so Jesus was in perfect harmony with the law and the prophets. Just some things to think about there about Moses. So we have Moses being out there. Now he's basically on the run. He's a murderer. He's killed a man. And he's living way out away from Egypt. And I'd like to read the first 12 verses of Exodus 3. This is where Moses gets the call. He sees the burning bush. And he's a shepherd. He says, "Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and led the flock to the backside of the desert, and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed." You know, I'm sure that was, you know, he may have seen that before in the desert where maybe it was so hot things just burnt, but this one here, it just sat there and burned, and the bush wasn't burned up. So he went over to it, and when the Lord saw that and Moses said, "I will turn now aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt." And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses," and he said, "Here am I." And he said, "Draw not nigh hither, but put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover," he said, "I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of their land unto a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites." One thing there at the beginning of that verse, there's a promise there, and apparently Moses didn't realize that was a promise when we go on down and see how he made excuses. In the beginning of verse 8, it says, God says, "And I am come down to deliver them." It wasn't like, "I'm coming down and I'm going to ask you to maybe deliver them out." No, he had a plan, and he said, "And I've come down to deliver them." Verse 9, "Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." And Moses said unto God, "Who am I that I should have gone to Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt?" And he said, "Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee, that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain." So we have there God informed Moses that it's a promise, "I've come down to deliver my people. And he also commissions him, and he says, come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh. And, you know, I can only imagine he's probably thinking, oh, no, no, not this guy. You know, I'm just a man, just like anybody else. And, you know, Ron asked that question, what does it take to be adequate? And I'm sure that was one of Moses' things he thought of. Well, I'm not adequate to do this. And so right away he come out with some excuses. And verse 13 was the first one. And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? So his excuse was, well, Israel's not going to know who I am. I'm coming down there. They have no idea who I am. And his answer was then in verses 14 and 15, God tells him what to say. And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, thou shalt thus say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. And God said moreover unto Moses, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. So there, his excuse number one didn't work. So he went to excuse number two. And he said, well, they're not going to believe me anyway, even if I do go down and tell them that. He said, they're just not going to believe me. And in verse, chapter 4, verse 1, and Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And then God came back with his answer again. And starting at verse 2 is God's answer to, verses 2 through 9 is God's answer to that excuse. And the Lord said unto him, what is that in thine hand? And he said, a rod. And he said, cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it. And it became a rod in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath appeared unto thee. And the Lord said furthermore unto him, put now thy hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. And he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again and plucked it out of his bosom. And behold, it was turned again as his other flesh. And it shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to thy voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. And it shall come to pass, if they will not believe also these two signs, neither hearken unto thy voice, that thou shalt take of the water of the river and pour it upon the dry land, and the water which thou takest out of the river shall become blood upon the dry land. So he had several things he could do, three things. One was the rod that turned into a snake. The other one was his hand would become leprous. And the third one would be turning the water into blood. So then he obviously didn't want to do this job. Because if somebody wants to do something, you're going to find a way to do it. And if you're not going to want to do something, you're going to have excuses. So he came up with excuse number three. He says, well, I'm not a good speaker at all. He said, I can't talk right. And some people think he had a problem with stuttering and wasn't able to get his words out properly. And starting there at verse 10, he says, And Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, for I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth, or who maketh the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. And he said, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well, and also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee. And when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him, and put words in his mouth, and I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you what you shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people, and he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou shalt be to him instead of God. So he came back with the answer to his third excuse. And also I mentioned that Moses was 80. Well, this was also his older brother. He was 83. So now you have two 80-year-old guys that are heading into the wilderness for 40 years. Of course, they didn't know all that, what was going to happen. But God told him, I'm going to help you speak. I'll tell you what to say, and I'll allow your brother, Aaron, to accompany you. And then in the next few verses, there's five promises that God gives and tells him. Verses 18 through 20, or verses, let's go back to starting at verse 17. And thou shalt take this rod in thine hand, wherewith thou shalt do signs. And Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, Let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. And Jethro said to Moses, Go in peace. And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, Go, return unto Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them upon an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. And the Lord said unto Moses, When thou goest to return to Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh, which I have put in thine hand. But I will harden his heart, that he shall not let thy people go. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, Thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. So he said he was going to, the five promises that he made at this point were that Israel's elders would accept his message, Pharaoh at first would refuse his message, and that Pharaoh would, however, be persuaded through divine miracles of judgment that Israel would leave Egypt with much riches given to them by their masters, and that following the Exodus, Israel would worship God on the very mountain Moses stood upon at that moment. So, you know, Moses probably asked, you know, well, why me? Why did you pick me? And I'm sure there's times that maybe we've been asked to do something and it's like, well, why me? Well, when the Lord spoke to Moses and told him he was the chosen vessel to lead Israel out of bondage from Pharaoh, Moses had three objections, and his objections were all excuses. I'm sure we've made some of the same type of excuses when the Lord has called us to do a work for him. Moses' immediate response to the Lord's call was, Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? Moses knew that he wasn't anything compared to the Lord's greatness and power, but God sought him out to use him because he realized his inadequacy. God's always looking to do a work through frail and meek people. God can do more through human frailty than pride. He can't focus people on his will who are too focused on themselves. God told Moses alone he wouldn't do anything, but with God, he would accomplish something. God wants to use people who will give him the glory, and we cannot be interested in making a name for ourselves. And the question is asked, are you open to what God is asking you to do for him? And are you willing to step out in faith and follow God regardless of what he is asking to do? So then we have Moses going, basically preparing Pharaoh and also preparing the Israelites for this whole thing to take place. And Exodus 5:1 says, And afterward Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness. And of course Pharaoh, you know, he's like, No, I don't think so. That's not going to work. And in chapter 5, verse 2, Pharaoh said, Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go. So, you know, he had basically insulted the God of Israel. And so after that, in verses 6 and 7, this is what he decided to do since they said they were going to leave. And Pharaoh commanded the same day the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, Ye shall no more give the people straw to make brick. As heretofore, let them go and gather straw for themselves. So they were, you know, they had it hard enough the way it was, been doing hard labor for years, and now they took away one of the ingredients that's needed to make brick, and they were going to have to go find that part of the ingredient. And along with that, they were supposed to still make the same amount of bricks. They weren't, You know, their quota was not going to go down. So he increased the burden of Israel. And of course, then the people, when the people heard that and heard what Moses did, then now they're not real happy with Moses anymore either. They, they started blaming Moses for their increased work burden and that they were abuses that were heaped upon him. And then as I was studying this, I thought, was this something that God was making them to be more ready to leave by having it harder now than what it was? You know, if there's something that continually gets harder and harder, if there's a chance for that to go away, you're looking for that to go away. And so Moses complained to God about this and was again reassured that eventually everything would be fine, everything would go as planned. So then we have Moses coming before Pharaoh in chapter 7, verses 8 through 14. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, When Pharaoh shall speak unto you, saying, Show a miracle for you, thou shalt say unto Aaron, Take thy rod and cast it before Pharaoh, and it shall become a serpent. Then Moses and Aaron went into Pharaoh, and they did as so as the Lord hath commanded. And Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, now the magicians of Egypt. They also did in like manner with their enchantments, for they cast down every man his rod, and they became serpents. But Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. And he hardened Pharaoh's heart, that he hearkened not unto them, as the Lord had said. And the Lord said unto Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hardened, he refuseth to let thy people go. So now, Moses is now to the point where, okay, we have a guy here that's got a hardened heart. How are we going to proceed from here? And, God told Moses he was going to harden Pharaoh's heart. Moses knew that it was going to happen. And the hardness of his heart prevented Pharaoh from listening to God. And, a hardened heart prevents us from also listening to God and obeying him. And, Moses could have quit in the middle of being discouraged, and I'm sure this wasn't the first time he was discouraged, and we all know that, but he didn't. God could have given up on Moses, but he didn't. So we all face discouragement in life and doing things for God. There's always discouragements. And Satan would love to see us get discouraged and ready to quit. But we need to keep pressing on and being obedient to God's call, no matter how we feel or how things go. Then we come to the plagues. And I'll just go down through. We're probably not going to spend a lot of time looking at each plague, but there were 10 plagues that came upon the Egyptians. The first one was the plague upon the Nile River and all other water which God turned into blood. The second one was the plague of frogs. The third one was the plague of lice. Fourth, the plague of flies. Fifth, the plague upon the cattle. Sixth, the plague of boils upon man and beast. Seventh, the plague of hail and lightning, which devastated the land. Eighth, the plague of locusts. Nine, the plague of the three-day darkness. And then 10, the plague of death upon the firstborn. And something I never realized until I was studying this. I don't know, maybe you guys all knew it, but I did not. It was brought out in something that I had looked up. There was two purposes for these plagues. One was to show Israel that their true God. And the other one was to show Egypt that they're false gods and show that they can be defeated. For each one of these plagues, they had a god. And it lists, I'll just give an example here. When they turned water into blood, the name of their god was Osiris. The frog invasion was Hekt. Lice was Seb. Those were the names of their gods. And by these plagues happening, and then the power of God showing through that, it basically showed that their god in that area is not strong at all. I just thought that was interesting. I'd never run across that before. Some interesting things about the plague. During four of the plagues, Pharaoh vowed to free Israel if Moses would stop the judgment, but then he lied about his real intentions each time. And that was the frog plague, the fly plague, the hail and lightning plague, and the locust plague. And during the plagues, Pharaoh suggested four compromises in attempting to weaken Moses' mission, but all were rejected. The first compromise he offered was, worship your God here in Egypt. Second one was, go, but don't go too far. The third one was, go, but leave your children behind. And the fourth one was, go, but leave your flocks and herds behind. And Moses told him no to all four of those, that no, we're all gone, we're taking everything with us, and we're leaving. And then in Exodus 11, the first six verses, this was the final warning before the last plague. Exodus 11, verses 1 through 6. And the Lord said unto Moses, yet will I bring one more plague more upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterwards he will let you go hence. When he will let you go, he shall surely thrust you out hence altogether. Speak now in the ears of the people, and let every man borrow of his neighbor, and every woman of her neighbor, jewels of silver and jewels of gold. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. By the way, does anyone know why, when they borrowed all those gold and silver, you know what it was used for? I'm assuming, I don't know if it actually was, but I think I know what it was used for. It was used for all the instruments in the tabernacle. They had everything they needed to build everything. And Moses said, thus saith the Lord, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sitteth upon his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the mill, and all the firstborn of beasts. And there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there was none like it, nor shall be any like it any more. But against any of the children of Israel shall not a dog move his tongue against man or beast, that ye may know how that the Lord doth put a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. So there was the promise that God gave to Moses that this is the last one, and he will let you go when that happens. And then in chapter 12, 29 through 36, this is where the last plague happened. It said, it came to pass that at midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise up and get you forth from among my people, both ye and the children of Israel, and go, serve the Lord as ye have said, and take your flocks and your herds as ye have said, and be gone, and bless me also. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we be all dead men. And the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs being bound up in their clothes upon their shoulders. And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed of the Egyptians silver, jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent unto them such things as they required, and they spoiled the Egyptians. So we have here that Pharaoh finally buckled down, and he let the children of Israel and Moses have their desire to go out into the wilderness. So that brings, we'll just cover this yet on the Red Sea, and then we'll probably close. So Israel came to the Red Sea, and in chapter 14, verses 5 through 9, and it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? And he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt, and captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with a high hand. But the Egyptians pursued after them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh. and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth before Baal-zephon. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes and beheld the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. And they said unto Moses, because there was no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. So here we have the children of Israel. Now they're backed up against the Red Sea, and they have the Egyptians right behind them. So the people were ready to give up. You know, they were done. They'd have rather died in Egypt. And Moses told them, or God told them that, just, we'll get you out of this. You know, he got them out of, they should have thought 3 days earlier, they were still in Egypt. And God brought them out miraculously. You know, Egypt had the plagues, the land of Goshen, Israel did not. But yet, God was with them, and we can see by the cloud, the pillar of cloud. And I always thought that was interesting to me, that in 19 and 20 it says, and the angel of God which went before the camp of Israel removed and went behind them, and the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that no one came not near the other all night. The cloud was between them. And in the desert, I don't know how many of you have been in the desert, but they say at nighttime it'll get cold. It'll get really cold in the desert. It gets blistering hot in the daytime. And so the pillar was between the Israelites and the Egyptians, and I'm sure the Egyptians had the dark side, so it was probably cold. And on the other side, where the Israelites were, it was like a pillar of fire, so they would have had heat and also light. And I think if you follow that throughout Scripture, it mentions more than once that the cloud, they would move when the cloud moved. And I guess I've always felt God had that cloud there for them. During the daytime, it would have protected them from the blistering sun. And then at night, it talked about a pillar of fire. God would take that cloud and turn it on fire. And they would have heat during the night, and they would also have light during the night. So they came to the Red Sea there, and God told Moses in verses 21 and 22 of that same chapter, verse 14, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels, that they drove them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. So again, we have God using Moses to help deliver them and get them over another miracle as they cross into the Red Sea. Well, I have a whole lot more, but I'm sure you don't want to spend the rest of the evening here. But just in conclusion, though the story of Moses ends up on a rather sad note with him not being able to enter into the Promised Land, just remember all of the good things that he did right in God. In one lifetime, in a 40-year period, Moses was able to do the following. He spoke directly to God through a burning bush. He was used by God to change the entire course of Jewish history by delivering the Israelites from the Egyptians. He watched God throw 10 powerful judgments against the Egyptian country. He watched God part the Red Sea. He personally received 10 commandments from God the Father. And, you know, I often thought that would be just, I mean, to receive something God actually wrote on those tablets. That was his writing. You know, he wrote on there. And he personally got those from the Lord. He talked a second time with God the Father up on Mount Sinai. He was able to see the manifest presence of God with God showing him his backside up on Mount Sinai. He watched God's manifest presence come down on the tabernacle they had built and lead them on a daily basis. And then he was directly responsible for the teaching of God and all of his ways to the younger generation of Israelites, who eventually would be the ones to enter into the promised land. There's not a single character in the Old Testament who can bear comparison with Moses. His powerful reasoning with Pharaoh, his courageous journey through the wilderness, his amazing patience with the complaining people, and his unfailing confidence in God's promise. One commentator says of him, he is awesome and enduring, a maker of history and a friend of God. Thank you.